I've been trying to think since I spoke with you. There was a lady that worked at the station there in Diboll, ASPL, who is from a long-time Diboll family, and her husband worked, I forgot what he did, at Temple Industries, too. And she was office manager, and I cannot remember her name. Maybe her
Lanyon? Lanyon or
no, no, I remember Tommy Ward Lanyon very well.
Okay.
And he was married to Evelyn Davis. Mrs. Davis, who
oh,
ran
right,
the Pine
Valley. Right. Bird Davis, yeah.
Yeah, Bird Davis. Right. Her daughter married Tommy Ward Lanyon. And then they later split, and she married Barney Franklin, who was the general manager of Lufkin Coca-Cola many, many years, and they moved to Florida, and he died about a year or so ago. I guess she's still there. And her son was in the industry, as was I.
That's okay. I'll just hold it like this. You can lean back.
Yeah, but anyhow, I was trying to remember everybody. There was Ullman McMullen, who was from Diboll. He was an announcer at KSPL when I was there, on a good one. And then Tommy Ward Lanyon became station manager. Tommy came in here from the West Coast and had quite a background in show business and the industry and so forth, and did a good job managing the station and watching its early growth. KSPL was most unusual in its time in that it had that great good music sound. It had the FM that had the good music sound, and then it had the AM, which we played all kinds of music. We played, today they would call them the golden oldies, I guess, but we played a lot of that.
I heard it phrased in the newspaper one time. It said emphasis on melody rather than beat.
Yeah, that's very
in
good.
In the early 60s.
That's very good. And it did have an emphasis on melody rather than the beat. And I've often said one of the biggest mistakes that I made, there came a time, and I forget the exact year, but it was after I had worked there, that Pete Ronalds and I talked about buying that station.
Now, was this when Mr. Temple still owned it?
Uh-huh, he
I think
owned
he
it.
Sold it in 67.
All right, this was before that. This was in the early 60s, I believe it was. And anyhow, we went to him and to his people. Didn't talk so much directly with
That's
him
right.
as we did with his representatives. And had we talked with him, we probably would have bought it. But we wound up $5,000 apart, and what the agreed value was, we thought at the time. And Ronalds and I decided not to buy it. And that was a mistake on our part, because we should have bought it. It would have been a good investment. And it was a great property. It was properly run, top quality, good equipment. Everything about it was a plus. Almost like everything about Arthur Temple is a plus. And every investment, everything that he's allowed himself to get involved with is a plus. But the radio station was no exception. But we didn't buy it. And afterwards we said, why didn't we come with that other $5,000? We negotiated back and forth. And long before Pete died, which was 7 years ago, I guess, we talked many times about the fact that what might have happened
what
had we bought it,
because
it was a good property.
Can you tell me a little bit what brought you to KSPL?
I can tell you exactly what brought me there. I had gone through a divorce in Lufkin, and I had only one child, and he was with his mother up in North Texas, living there and going to school. And at the time, I said, you know, if I can do something in the summer, get a job in the summer in Lufkin, he could come because he was to spend summers with me.
Now where were you living at the time?
I was living here in Lufkin.
In Lufkin, okay. I'm sorry.
I said, I'll get a job, and he can come down, spend the summer, and play Little League Baseball. And so we did that, and I went to KSPL. I had worked earlier at KRBA and also at KTRE. KRBA was there long before anybody else. Mr. Yates signed that station on 1938. And I was there in 42. And I was there because he fired a guy on the spot one evening. And all the guys my age, all the high school kids, very few of us had cars. So we would gather on the street corner in downtown Lufkin and watch traffic go by and yell at the girls and all those normal things. Anyhow, he walked up one evening and he had just fired a guy on the spot. And it was like 6:30 or 7. And he wondered if I wanted to go to work. And so he hired me. And that's the way I got into broadcasting. He took me off the street.
Took you off the street. But you were in high school at the time.
I had just graduated.
And
that's the reason he knew me. I had been on the debate team. And he had heard me and so on and so forth. He said that was the reason that he hired me.
Graduated from Lufkin High School.
Right.
In 41?
42. Graduated in 42. So he hired me. And I went to work for $27.50 a week. I thought that was great money. And
What did you do at the station?
I was an announcer. The night he hired me, he took me back to the station, which was upstairs above Cash Drug at the time, which is on First Street, was. He operated the control boards. And I talked into the microphone, read the commercials. And
Had you ever done anything like that before?
Never. And all of a sudden, within a matter of weeks, I thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know. I thought, man, this is a bird nest on the ground. And I didn't realize that it would lead me to later coin that phrase which too many people use even today, and that is, shoot the bull, pass the buck, and get a receipt as a formula for success. But anyhow, I worked at KRBA for a good while, and then I worked at the post office. Mind you, these were the war years, and I thought that any moment that I was going to be in the military, and I was trying to get into the Air Force, and I had a neck injury from high school. I had fallen and cracked a vertebrae in my neck, and I couldn't pass the Air Force physical. And that kind of broke my heart. And as I waited to see, get drafted and see what they were going to do while I was working at KRBA, then I went to work at the post office and I carried, I was a mailman in Lufkin and carried a route delivering the mail, walking the streets. And I did that for a good while, about a year. And then after I had gone failed to get into the military because of that injury to my neck, I said, it's time to go into college. So I went to North Texas State and went to school and then came back here in 1949. I had, after college, I had gotten married. I didn't graduate. It was while in college I got married.
Did you take any courses in broadcasting?
I took speech.
Speech
and writing and journalism.
Journalism.
And as a matter of fact, that was my major at the time. Music was my minor because I was playing saxophone in a dance band, and that actually enabled me to go to school because I would make a few bucks here and there playing in this band. But anyhow, I'm going the circuitous route to get back to where I really am trying to go. After North Texas State, I took a job with a manufacturing company manufacturing lingerie in Denton. And I opened a new territory for them. I traveled Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska.
Do you recall the name?
Yes, Russell Newman Manufacturing Company, and the label was Tex Sheen, one word, Tex Sheen.
Sheen.
And I traveled for about 9 months selling lingerie. There are a lot of stories about that, but that doesn't have to do with broadcasting, so I won't get into that. But anyhow, one week, I got snowbound in western Kansas. And of course, if you're a salesman, if you don't make the commission, you don't make any money. And if you don't travel, you don't make the commission. And I was snowbound for 3 weeks. And at about that time, a man with whom I had worked at KRVA, Richmond Lewin was his name, he called and wanted to know if I would be interested in coming back to Lufkin as an announcer. There was a new station in town called KTRE. And anyhow, I came back. I came back in February of 1949. And I worked here, I went to Dallas in 59. So in 1949, I was working at KTRE. The exact time that I was at KSPL, I want to say, was about 57 or 58. Your records might reflect it more accurately, but I think it was along about that time.
Actually, I think it was in 60 or 61.
Well, 60, 61, okay. You have a more accurate thing than I do. Because I went from there. I went from KSPL to
WFAA
in Dallas.
Yes.
But anyhow, I came back here in order to spend the summer with my son. And that's the reason that I took the job that I did. The shift that I was working there allowed me to be with my son during his little league time and so on and so forth. So that worked out very nicely. But I didn't realize how fortunate I was. KSPL was the third broadcast facility with whom I had worked, but by far the best. Best equipment, the best music, the best run, everything about it was the best. I enjoyed it the most.
The third being KRBA, KTRE, and then KSPL?
That's right.
You didn't previously work in Dallas before at WFAA?
No, I didn't work in Dallas until after KSPL. And that came about in kind of a strange way itself, in that I had gone I'd auditioned for a sports job, play-by-play, for the Baltimore Orioles, and the audition took place in New York City. And I went up and I made the finals, and so they flew me up there and I talked with them, and I did not get the job. But in the course of that, I talked with some other people. I talked with ABC Sports, and they told me to contact the station in Dallas. And so I did, and the ABC affiliate. And that's how they had an interest in me, and I finally went from Lufkin to WFAA in Dallas.
I think the newspapers actually, at the time that you started working for KSPL, they put a photograph of you in the Diabolo newspaper, and it mentioned even then that you were seeking freelance sports broadcasting.
That's right.
When you came there.
That's right.
And then, like I said, about less than a year later, you know, they announced that you went to Dallas.
Yeah.
So that was
that
was that for
freelance
the,
I was doing. Okay. Was the Baltimore Oriole job, and as a matter of fact, they hired a man by the name of Bob Murphy, who later would become like a 35-year play-by-play guy, not for the Orioles, he was only there a short time, but for the New York Mets. He went to the New York Mets and formed a broadcast team with Ralph Kiner, the old former player, and they were the broadcast team for the Mets for a long, long time. But anyhow, I didn't get that job. I came back here and wound up at WFAA. And the manager of that station, after he interviewed me and told me he wanted to hire me, he said, would you be willing to work in radio for a short while I make some changes, move some people around, and get the anchoring job for the news on television, where I could move you into it? I said, sure. So I went up there first as a disc jockey for about 3 months, I guess, and did that, and then moved into Channel 8 as an anchor person. And
not just news, but the full anchor of the news.
Yeah,
anchor.
I did. Well, I anchored their early news show and their late news program, you know, the 6 o'clock and the 10 o'clock news.
Was that your first experience with television?
No, the first experience with television was here in Lufkin.
We're KTRE. You did radio and television.
We signed that on in December of 55, I think, when we signed the station on here. And I anchored the news there, did a little of everything. I was sales manager, I was news editor. Everybody wore a lot of hats.
Were you the first news anchor
at
KTRN?
Yes, right. First one.
Okay.
And we did a little of everything there, and then from there we wound up doing the other things that I've mentioned. But my experience at Dieball at KSPL was a very enriching one, for not just the fact of being exposed to a good station and working with a good station, but being exposed to a lot of good people, or becoming more closely exposed to them. Even though you're 10 miles away when you live in Lufkin and you know who they are, and you had spent time there, and you'd eaten at the Pine Bough Buffet many times, and you knew the Antlers Hotel had been built there, and you knew that the Temple family had done these wondrous things in the forest industry and with wood products and byproducts and so forth. Still, you couldn't get to know them on the phone, close basis that you could being there and working there and being close to them. So it enabled me to do that, and later on, even after I was at Channel 8 in Dallas and went from there to ABC, which happened in February of 63, I went to ABC to anchor a news called Murphy Martin with the News every night, and it was in the slot where Ted Koppel is now, where the Nightline is, and I did that for a year. But
how did you like that?
It was very interesting.
But moving to New York, just a whole experience.
A whole different ballgame. The people that refer to it as the concrete jungle, I didn't refer to it as that initially when I went there, but about the time that I was getting ready to go back to Dallas, move back to Texas, I was calling it the concrete jungle too. Getting there, they had heard I'd done quite a bit of work doing feeds. I covered the Billy Saul Estes trial, and the network used all of my material in the coverage of that trial. I covered John Kennedy when he came down to visit Mr. Rayburn when he was dying in a hospital in Dallas. He was Speaker of the House. I did several stories for the network. That's where they saw my first work and decided they wanted me to be one of the people. And they brought 18 of us into New York to audition for this job. And they narrowed it down to 3. And then from the 3, they chose me. And I went to work in February 25th, 1963. And it was different. Different in many ways. First of all, I'd never worked around an operation that was totally union. And everybody at the network was a member of some union.
You wouldn't do that in Dieball, would you?
No. And I'm not sure I would do it anywhere else again either. The contract that I signed with them, when I finally signed, had a clause in it that said, you agree, if you are not now a member of, you will join the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists, which is, everybody refers to it as AFTRA. It's still the union for performers. And that was a new experience. So many people to do the job that only you had done before. We had writers and reporters in the field and producers and engineers and all of these various type peoples. And it was a very enriching, different experience. And I look back and I think back, all of the places that I had been prior to going there, to New York, had contributed and armed me to do that, because I did not finish college, which was wrong. I would never recommend that to a young person. Always stay with it. You've got to have the degree today. You cannot compete in society if you are not prepared in your brain, and you've got to get college to get that. But the fact that I was offered that, I was never one to back away from challenges. I always welcomed challenges. And I thought that was a big challenge. And it was a big challenge. But because I did not go to college, I had to work harder, dig harder, do more research. And it was just a tougher job. Mm-hmm. But I made the most of it. Did well. The program did well. And then they had a change in the upper executive management, and they took me off the air and a year after I had gone on, and I still had time on a contract because I had signed a three-year contract, and they offered to pay me off a lump sum, and I refused that because I felt that I had an indictment against me, the fact that they were taking me off the air, and that I had something else to prove. So I stayed as their roving correspondent, going all over the world, wherever the news story was breaking, they would send me. So I did that.
Was that some of the early satellite?
Some of the satellite as a result transmissions? The satellite show came about as a promotion idea by the network to promote me on that new nighttime show when I went up there in February of 63. They decided to send me to Paris to do the satellite news program. There had never been a total news program done via satellite from a foreign country. And it was a promotional tool. But to show you how dumb I was, when they first said, well, we're going to send you to Paris, I thought they were talking about Paris, Texas. And I thought, man, yeah, I want to
get me go back home.
You know, go back home. But I went to Paris, France, and we did the program. And it was different. We rolled up in a taxi cab from the ABC News Bureau, and I had an interpreter with me who worked at the Bureau. And as I leaned to get out of the cab, I came up. There were armed men, military men with bayonets fixed, pointed at me. And this was when they were having some threats against de Gaulle and his regime in Paris. And the government owned the radio and TV facilities, and they had it surrounded by security. And when I rolled up, they didn't know who I was, but she quickly told them who I was and why I was there. So we did the program, and it was the first that had ever been done. It was not outstanding. I didn't do a very good job. I did a good job, got it done. But
and that was the debut of Murphy Martin with the news?
It was about 6 weeks after the debut. But this was a deal that they thought, since no one had ever done it, they could use that to promote this
to promote your show that had already started.
Yeah.
But it was near
and it
the
did. It got them a lot of press.
Okay.
Papers around the country and
maybe
wire
that
services,
paper.
wire services and so forth. And then when I left that news, after I did that news program, there's a story involved with that. Mr. Kennedy was killed in Dallas on November 22nd, and I was the anchor man in New York at the time. And the events that followed that, the network took a lot of heat, because they had an anchorman on the air that was from Dallas, and Dallas had killed the president. I mean, this was the thinking of some people and some network affiliates around the country. They started putting heat on them to get rid of me. And finally they did. I'm not positive that the heat alone did it, that they were taking it. I do know that it didn't help and that it was involved because they talked about it. But that's when I became the roving correspondent. And covered civil rights stories all over the nation. Did the Selma to Montgomery march in Alabama. I did the riots in New Jersey, riots in Detroit. Got pinned down by gunfire. My camera crew and me, we hid beneath a fire truck in Newark, New Jersey during the riots there. Snipers on the building had us pinned down. Hmm. And we had to stay there about an hour, hour and a half. And there are a lot of interesting things. They've got Molotov cocktails. Had to wear bulletproof vest in Harlem during the riots there. Got chased upstairs. They were chasing us. We ran upstairs and There was a door open. We ran in and scared a poor lady half to death, took refuge in her apartment, and then watched out the window as they burned our news vehicle down in the street. They overturned it and set it on fire.
And where was that? That was in Harlem, New York City.
But there are all kinds, you know, whatever the news was, you did it. And that's the reason why I said there's never a dull moment. And if someone really wants to have a front row seat to history, they should be in the news business, because it provides that opportunity. And every day is a new day, something new and exciting, the stories that you cover. And the import on history is a challenge and also rewarding. I anchored the 1964 Democratic and Republican political conventions for ABC Radio, not for the TV side. Howard K. Smith was anchoring on the TV side, but I did on the radio side. And by the way, thanks to my days at KSPL, my wife and I, she just sat down and got some coffee. My wife and I at the Democratic Convention in New Jersey spent some wonderful time with Arthur and Lottie Temple because of our days back in Bible and our days here. But at that convention, we had dinner a couple of times and spent a lot of quality time with him, which we recall with great fondness now and then. But the news stories are Dr. King. I often say, and I don't know why, I was one of the few reporters, you could count on one hand the number of reporters, that had the ear of both Dr. King and Governor Wallace at the same time. Hmm. As diametrically opposed as they were in their thinking, I had their private telephone numbers, could call and did call, and they would talk with me and I could interview them, and both trusted me, and I never violated their trust. And I think that's important in the news business, is that you don't violate confidences, you don't violate trust. The general public in this country, I don't think, still realizes how important and valuable news sources are to you, or to a reporter. And while one of my pet peeves is seeing a story that says, sources say, I want to know who that source is.
That's right.
And today the general public wants to know who that source is.
And the historian years down the road is going to definitely want to know.
Yeah, down the road they want to know who was the source said this, that, or the other. And I have become an excellent one to critique news programs in my latter days. But the days, we spent 5 years at ABC in New York, and my station in Dallas called, their ratings had dropped since I left and went to New York, and they wanted me to come back and anchor back there. And they put enough money on the table that got my interest. And we had missed Dallas, although my wife would still be living there. She would live wherever my job took me. But she really enjoyed New York more than I did. And she's a great shopper, and she walked everywhere. She walked, rode the buses and the cabs. We never owned a car in New York. We were very fortunate. We lived near Mickey Mantle, and Mickey and I had been friends in Dallas. And he let us use his car. When he was on the road, the Yankees were on the road, we'd just go over to the garage of the St. Moritz Hotel where he lived during baseball season. We'd go over and get his car. We wanted a car, and we'd drive up to West Point or drive wherever we wanted to go on weekends. When the ball club was in town, we were always at Yankee Stadium. We went to the ball games. And we saw a lot of memorable moments there, not the least of which she and I rode up through Harlem. He was driving on Mother's Day. I think it was 66, I'm not sure. But anyhow, He told us on the way up that he had called his wife, Merla, back in Dallas, and told her that for her Mother's Day present, he was going to hit his 500th home run. He had been trying to hit that for about 4 weeks, and he couldn't. He was unable to hit it. He hit it that day. And then after he hit it, after the game, everybody wanted to talk to him so quick, and he refused to be interviewed by anybody in the press until he did an interview with me for ABC first. So we had, that was another interesting moment. But back to my good fortunes, and that's what they are. My good fortunes, the roads I was able to travel as a news person. Those roots that began right here in Angelina County were so important to them. My days at